welcome to the F1 show. Sorry we missed the Canadian Grand Prix, but it just didn't really work out in terms of Joe switching and being away and all of the usual stuff that interferes with podcasting, which is still a hobby, unfortunately. I'm joined to discuss the weekend in Valencia on the streets with a fantastic bunch, a wonderful panel. Starting top left, we've got Mr. Steve Maber. How are you doing, mate?
Great, sir. How are you?
I'm all right.
I don't know how you can class Valencia on the streets.
It's a street circuit, isn't it?
Rubbish. Have you ever seen streets that look that nice?
That's what I was thinking when I was watching it today, actually.
Are you talking about that nice?
No, not yet. I've got this theory that this place actually doesn't exist. There's no streets that look that nice. It's not a street circuit. It's a calm... carved circuit into a glorious backdrop. It's a beautiful
right
place.
Around the port. The cranes are in there, the big boats are in there, the pools are in there high up in the balconies, and
yeah, lovely circuit to watch.
It was not that I've seen all of it, but I've seen some of it. So
yeah,
next to him we've got Miss Sarah Gray. How you doing, mate?
I'm very well, thank you.
Did you enjoy the race?
I did. It's funny, I was actually thinking that looking in. I was looking for, because normally when you have a street circuit, you normally see the lines of where they've been burnt off the road so that they don't, or they're there like at Monaco. And I was thinking, this is never a street circuit. It can't be. It's got huge runoff areas. They don't have that sort of thing.
No, they do, apparently. Must be a beautiful city to drive around.
Absolutely.
If fast. And last but by no means least, Mr. Christopher Woods, finally, he's back.
Hello.
Big long absence. How you doing? Yeah. And apparently, the Canadian Grand Prix was the only one you were on time for so far this season. And we didn't do it. Do apologise.
Yep. I forgive you.
Sincerest apologies. How have you been since I went to Marussia?
Oh.
I learnt so much that day. Did you know that they've got a rig that they take the F1 cars and they put them on and they fix them on the axles, and it's got four pistons on it, and it simulates every track to within 50 millimetres. And it actually runs the whole track around the, and it puts the cornering surfaces on and the suspension things and that kind of stuff. And Alonso, if you put a car on there and he watches it for a minute, he can tell you which track it is.
That's nerdy.
That blew my mind. I said, you're having a laugh. That's just like an old wives' tale. No, that's the truth. The track that they've got, they put it on, Alonso can tell you. He's that into it. He's so in tune with what the tracks are like.
What's Alonso doing in a Marussia garage?
No. They've got a rig that they all rent out and they borrow.
Okay.
All of them are testing on each other's stuff because none of them can afford everything.
Is it a rolling road down?
No, it's like four pistons that stick up, and they've got holes in the side where they take the wheels off and they mount the car on these four pistons, and the four pistons apply the forces of the track to make it go up and down and corner and that kind of stuff to road test the cars to see if they can withstand the forces. And Alonso can tell you which track they're on just by the way that the car moves.
Obviously, they have a fifth piston for testing for Massa.
Yeah, they've got a Maldonado piston that comes in from the side. That was a great trip.
More of that later.
It was a great, great trip, and we're gonna do one of the shows from there. Definitely,
you're so lucky.
We're gonna do one of the shows from there.
You're so lucky. You haven't had the chance to go already.
Do you know they get their own? Do you know the tire? They get show tires. They get travel tires. The cars get a specific set of tyres just so they can push them backwards and forwards. And then they take them off and put the real ones on. And I also found out as well, that you know what we were saying about the tyres and that kind of stuff, and everyone thinks there's favouritism and that kind of stuff. Apparently all the tyres are barcoded and there's a lottery at the start of the race and you get the tyres that come out of the lottery and that's the end of it. It's completely random. Pirelli can't even cheat. No one can cheat. It's really well done.
What was the factory like? Clean, clean, clean.
Oh, it was beautifully clean. Yeah, I mean, I tweeted a couple of pictures out, and I think Alex Fox said that he said my dentist's isn't that clean, and it was. There was the three tubs. I know the lingo now. You see the tubs. There was three tubs sat up on supports, and the place was spotless. Absolutely spotless.
What's a tub?
A tub is the front part of the car from the engine area right the way to the bit where they put the cone on, because it's like a bathtub. And they're allowed to carry the two cars plus one spare tub.
Give me some reality here. Just don't break my illusions. What was the car park like? Was it full of Skoda? Oh, no, Skoda's a good car, isn't it? Was it full of, like, old bangers?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, there wasn't a single car in there worth more than about 10 grand.
I bet everyone's kind of tinkered with their own car and made it special.
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, you know they've all got F1 shocks underneath.
Yeah. It's an old Morris Marina with some souped ups.
Blazing jags at lights.
There was not a lot of cars there with an awful lot. The only car in the whole place that looked really good was the one in reception, which was excellent. Last year's, though. Who cares? It was good. But we're going to go at some point. I spoke to Marussia and
that would be great.
We're going to do a show from there. Not
That'd
sure.
be great. That'd be great.
Be good.
It's pretty awesome.
The Grand Prix for Valencia, then. So, good. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Big thumbs up.
Well, Valencia's got a bit of a reputation for being a boring track, not much to overtake and that kind of stuff, but it kind of pulled out the screws today, didn't it?
Well, until lap 29, it kind of looked like it was going to be like that.
Yeah, I woke up at about lap 29.
Yeah, it wasn't looking like it was going to be thrilling, but then it all started happening. I mean, quali, so we start off with qualifying, I suppose. That looked really pedestrian. I mean, it was just like, apart from the fact that Button yet again couldn't get himself any kind of decent response out of his car, and Alonso dropping out into out of Q3 completely. Massey, you kind of, it's a given, isn't it? But Alonso, no. And then the Rosberg Hamilton thing. Schumacher was out of top shootout, yes, as well.
Mm. Well, we have a bit of a pattern emerging, don't we? Because people who show potential but don't make it to Q3 seem to do better in the race. So you can begin to understand why all these teams like Force India just don't bother.
Yeah, what's the point? Just sit
at that is happening now. Most qualifying is getting less and less important, isn't it?
Yeah. It was interesting, though, in the interview at the end of the race, and despite what happened in the race, and I'm not going to say that just yet, but Alonso said that he did actually focus on the fact that they were very, very poor. Ferrari as a whole were very, very poor in quali, and that they didn't get either of the cars into Q3. And that's something they really need to work on. So it sounds like they're not necessarily not worrying about it. It sounds to me like they are.
I don't think we're giving anything away here, Sarah, but on the basis that he won, I don't think that's really going to become an issue then.
No, I know, but it's about doing things in the right order, isn't it?
Well, it's about doing things in the order, as in at the end of the weekend, if you've got a one next to your name, you've done pretty good, I would have thought.
Well, yes, if you've got 25 points added to your total, then you've
Well, it's not just well, 25 points. If you've managed to get some no-hope to ram your nearest opponent off the track, and the other bloke who's your closest opponent after that has just suddenly come to a complete and utter standstill for no apparent reason, and you've now got a 20-point lead in the Drivers' Championship, you'll take that every weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, whatever he's earning, he could pay Maldonado, probably double Maldonado's salary to ram his closest rival off each week.
I wouldn't call him a no-hoper, though.
Maldonado?
He's won a race this year.
Yeah, it's just a cover.
I don't think so. Just a cover.
Yeah, they're making him look half-decent so that when he just suddenly starts ramming people off the track because Alonso's paying him to do it. If you watch him, by the way.
I just love the conspiracy theories.
is that it? Is that what it's become?
I've made that up, by the way, if anyone's actually believing what I've just said.
Really? Maldonado, banger racing F1 team.
So how much do you think Maldonado did pay him to ram him off the track?
Well, Maldonado's getting funded by the Venezuelan oil firms, isn't he? But, I mean, I can't see that they're paying him that much because, I mean, he's only won one race. He's probably done that just to get a bit like a win race bonus type thing and go back to the manager and say, can I have a bit more money, please? But I would say that Alonso is probably paid him to ram Hamilton off the track there, definitely. No question.
Are you sure you don't want to make that more certain?
Not even put allegedly in it.
I don't say that on the BBC. Not even on the Sky coverage, I bet they don't say that.
It's pussy journalism, that's why. There you go. They can't come out with the hard stories like I can.
It's the radical school of thought from
now that you've said that, Ranking. I watch every single race now, just watching Maldonado to just take people out so that he can make somebody win that probably wasn't going to win at the beginning of the race.
Well, now, I I was beginning to think that it was Hamilton's got something about the drivers beginning with M, because last year it was all about Massa. This year it seems to be about Maldonado.
It is. It seems to be. But him and Maldonado, well, Hamilton pisses everyone off at some point during the season, surely.
Yeah, he was having a go at Button today, wasn't he?
Really? Was he? What was he saying?
No, not verbally, on the track.
We knew he rammed him off a few years back, didn't he, in Canada?
Mm-hmm.
Before it all went wrong. Did we all see the qualifying ruckus between Rosberg and Hamilton then?
I didn't. Tell me about it.
Well, allegedly, on his flying lap...
Hamilton... Are you saying allegedly about this one?
Well, yeah, all right. Apparently. Through turns 21 to 25, Hamilton backed off to get a lead because he was struggling with people in front of him for his flying lap. And he backed up so much that Rosberg nearly was impeded, allegedly. But apparently the time that Rosberg was putting in going through turns 21 to 25 wasn't as fast as the qualifying lap that Hamilton did. So they said that it didn't happen. It wasn't true. And the only gap they got between was 1.1 seconds. So they reckon that Rosberg could have speeded up and not been impeded any further. So storm in a teacup. But there was penalties supposedly floating around, but they never actually transpired. He was exonerated.
Talking of which, did you see that Maldonado got a 20-second penalty after the race?
He did. That was for his shunt, wasn't he?
Indeed.
It's only a 20-second penalty for the next race?
No.
No, on the results for this race.
Yeah, because
did he finish then? I thought
yes, he did. He ended up being... He was ninth.
Yeah.
Sorry, 10th.
They put him back to 12th, so he's out of the points. And Senna, his teammate, got the last 1 point that was available.
It wasn't a huge fine then, was it?
Not considering how close he was to out of the points, no.
But considering that, who was it that was put at the back of the grid a few races back? Was it Hamilton was put at the back of the grid, wasn't it? And that wasn't a...
Well, that was because he didn't register a time, though. There was no time to give.
Yeah. I just think it's not very stern, really.
Martin Brundle tweeted a little while ago to say that all the talk at Valencia Airport on the way out between the F1 people is that the inconsistency of the penalties that have been handed out today. Because Shuey didn't get a penalty for supposedly opening his DRS under the yellow flags, which if you saw the F1... on the red button, there was some footage that clearly showed that he'd done that.
Yeah. There were some weird things that happened today as well. I don't know if you want to get into the race now.
Yeah, go for it. Just keep starting.
Well, kind of jumping into the middle of the race, but it was kind of to do with the marshals, and it was when one of the cars went off around lap 33 or so, 35. There was a car being pushed off the track by the marshals. Vettel, but on the track as well, there was guys waving green flags around it. I couldn't believe it. I would have thought they would be doubled yellowed at least, really getting them slow down when the guys were on the track. But I didn't manage to capture the footage from it. But there's definitely people waving green flags around the car with marshals being pushed on it. I couldn't believe it.
Well, it was scary because the car seemed to be going past at a fairly rapid pace, and they were fairly close to where the marshals were pushing the car off. And they were struggling to find somewhere to get that car off the track.
Well,
they got really scary.
From what Steve's saying there, though, they got no indication that there was any danger, so they would be heading towards.
No. I'm not complaining about the drivers. I mean, it was from a administration point of view, it was terrible.
Well, they're in danger because you've got guys, people on the track with cars overtaking, and they're encouraging them with green flags. I just didn't understand the logic of it.
Unless it all run out, and that's all they had left, but.
Yeah, that's it. Your lad who had the double yellows probably was pushing. But don't forget that all the teams have the GPS, so they can see where the car stops, so the drivers would have known. It's still a poor show, though.
That's good planning, isn't it? You, Jake, over there, if a car stops here, you do the pushing. You've got the yellow flags as well, okay?
just give them to someone else, right? Don't forget. Just push and don't forget wave this at is the important. Same time.
You'll be all right.
So, Steve, talking of Vettel, how much did you cheer when he stopped?
Me up, that did.
I was absolutely leaping for joy at that point.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? I just felt so sorry for him.
I was so fed up with the race, and I'm so pleased the safety car came out. But I just, for some reason, normally I'm not that anti him, but I wanted him to get a DNF.
Well, it was a rubbish race. Well, it was a, you know, there was things happening, but really spiced up when Vettel went out, and it just ended up getting better and better, kind of like 33 onwards. I don't think, if anyone hasn't managed to capture it yet, just fast forward the whole race to about lap 33 and then go on from there, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some good overtaking movers before then, but yeah, really got exciting after that point.
I want to know how the Red Bull was just so much faster. It's like they were LMP1 and everyone else is Porsche doing Le Mans. His speed was just incredible. Could not believe how much faster he was.
But then it all conked out.
Yeah. And exactly the same problem happened to the Renault engine in the Lotus as well. The alternator failure, that was exactly the same problem on both Renault engine cars.
Oh, was it? I didn't hear that Vettel's problem was the alternator.
It was, yeah. They were talking about it on the red button. And I think it was Christian Horner that actually said it was the alternator, as it was on Grosjean's car as well, which is rather spooky.
It's a common problem.
On Renault engine cars as well.
You'd have thought they'd have gone one after the other. Sorry.
Well, they did almost. It was a couple of laps apart, wasn't it?
That was a joke. It was a bad joke. Okay. Alternate turn.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Moving on.
Very bad joke.
We must talk about our team, our adopted team, of course, of Marussia. And now I always think that when you look at the speed that they go around those corners with the big walls up and that kind of stuff, there's a few and they've got to have brown race suits. But apparently Timo Glock has got brown race suit this weekend. Not doing so well. Get well soon, Timo.
Poor lad, yeah.
I mean, is it an infection or is it an attack of the Montezuma's revenge?
Well, the description was that he couldn't keep any fluids down. So by down, they probably mean in.
Montezuma's revenge then. Most definitely.
Pretty grim.
That is pretty grim, and certainly not the kind of thing you put yourself through, race, in the heat.
Yeah, talk about an extra boost of curs.
two hours in a race suit.
Is the FIA legal, though?
As long as he uses the exhaust, it's fine.
You're giving Adrian Newey ideas.
It's like a James Bond script where he's putting effluent out the back of the car so that everyone slides on it. No.
Well, I saw that somebody had the idea of putting a straw hat on the circuit to try and cause some wacky races type incident where the straw hat comes on someone's visor just to increase the excitement.
Who's
That's
this?
How exciting!
Yeah,
No, I don't know who did it, but in the first 30-odd laps, somebody thought, oh, I've got to spice this up and put a straw hat in the middle of the track to try and have that.
It got jumped around a bit, didn't it? We saw that as well.
Mm. It did.
They're worried about things hitting drivers, aren't they? Because they're talking about canopies now for the cars. Whether they're going to eject the seats or not, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, they're really worried about the tyres striking the drivers if they come off the cars. So they've been looking at canopies. But one of the basic rules of F1 is that you can't have a canopy or a door. So...
Yes.
Nice picture tweeted out by Marussia today of Charles Peak doing a few laps, and that's one of the cars that I saw when I was there, and it's a thing of beauty, I have to say.
Hmm.
We were allowed to take as many pictures as we wanted, which I was really surprised about.
Awesome.
I've got a pile that I took. I didn't take a camera deliberately because I thought I wasn't going to be able to take any pictures, so I've taken them all on my iPhone. They've come out really, really well. But the only thing they said was when the engines come out, you can't take pictures of the engines, so... Now, one other picture that I noticed this weekend, which I thought was pretty impressive, was one of Ted Kravitz and his cameraman looking into one of the garages. And I didn't realise that times were so hard, because it seems that the only opportunity that Alex Stewart's had since he finished with England captain is to become Ted Kravitz's cameraman. If there's a lookalike for Alex Stewart, that's him.
He is, isn't he?
He is. Alex Stewart... He's now a cameraman on Sky, following around Ted Kravitz.
I think he's slightly older than Alex Stewart, though. I know Alex Stewart's a bit older now, but I wouldn't say he looked that older. But
You just put the picture up that I sent over.
I certainly would be very happy to put the picture up that you sent over, because they did keep cutting back to that, didn't they?
Not on my
gratuitously.
But no, they didn't on my coverage. I was quite impressed, actually. This picture, I just was blown away by it, because for me, I only saw this view once. So they put a camera on top of this, people on the podcast. So there's a
are camera you trying to show the flowing, curving lines of the track here, Steve, with this image that you sent in?
Well, no, they only used it once. They put the whole camera up there. They got a pool organised just behind the camera, and they put the models in front of the camera as well. But they used it once. If it was
Sky showed it quite a lot.
Oh, that's Sky for you, isn't it? Yeah.
So you pay, you get the goods.
Yeah, you see. My license fee. Justified.
I think that was a Red Bull party, I think.
Yeah. Right then, the race. So it all started happening, like you said, lap 28, 29 onwards. And the first thing was it Kobayashi? Was he the first one?
And Vern.
Now, Vern's been given a 10 grace place grid penalty for Silverstone, so...
I'm surprised it was as little as that. Because to be honest, I thought that was absolutely appalling what he did. It wasn't the incident, just the incident, but it was the fact that he actually, he actually carried on and actually just kept driving back to the pits and spewing bits of the car all over the place.
Well, I haven't seen what happened, so talk us through it, Sarah, while you restart your video. Well,
yeah, so I thought I'd restart it. He had a collision with Kobayashi, which was clearly his fault because he cut across in front of him. Obviously, he misjudged the front of the car. He'd overtaken him and he pulled in front and mistimed it. It was Kovalainen, sorry, it wasn't Kobayashi. And in doing so, he completely delaminated his back tyre and Kovalainen's front right tyre.
Right.
Got that the right way around. But his was really bad. And what happened was he just kept driving and driving, and bits kept falling off that tyre, and all sorts of bits and pieces were flying all over the track. He should have stopped. And to be honest, that's why they had the safety car, because of the bits that were coming off his car while he was trying to get back to the pit.
Are we talking bits of tyre or bits of car?
It was bits of tyre, bits of wheel, bits of goodness knows what else was on that.
So the frame was coming apart. And
It was tyre that became car and tyre, because the tyre had shredded and was flying round the hub. Because was it Crofty? He said he was going about three times as fast as he should have been to go back to the pits. He just had his foot down in second or third gear.
There's like a fifth wheel, you know, temporary spare kind of limit, 50 miles an hour or something.
But there should be. Actually, that's a good point. There should be, because he just got rid. He dispatched of what was left of his tyre down the back straight, which meant that there was so much debris, because he also destroyed the floor of his car and they couldn't get the hub properly off. And when they did finally, they ended up just taking him into the garage and stopping him, because he caused so much damage to the floor that he lost all his downforce.
I mean, he should have got a 10 grace good penalty for the incident, and I assume that's what he got it for.
Plus a fine.
Wow.
Plus a fine for what he actually did after the incident, which to me was as bad, because that caused the safety car.
Yeah, Vernier has been given officially a 10-place grid penalty for crashing into Kovalainen. So it's for the event of the impact, not what he did afterwards. But
I was furious.
Kamui Kobayashi has been given a 5-place grid penalty for colliding with Felipe Massa. So what was that all about? I haven't seen it.
I can't remember which one that was, to be honest.
It was a racing incident, so really.
Yeah.
The one that really surprised me was the drive-through for Senna. I mean, the incident was clearly not his fault. He was the one that was pushed into the wall. And he got the drive-through for it. That was just bizarre. I think that's part of what Martin Brundle was referring to.
There was some weird decisions today.
And everyone thought, wasn't it Raikkonen? Everyone thought Raikkonen was going to get a drive through or some form of penalty, and he just evaded it completely.
Yeah, no, I read a thing in the on Sky's website about a penalty, and I think I don't know if it's the one that Sarah's just talked about or not, but there was someone who took a penalty that wasn't theirs.
Oh,
took a penalty that wasn't theirs.
Yeah, someone took a penalty.
A bit weird.
took a penalty, but the consensus is that it wasn't theirs to take.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah,
so Senna. It might have been Senna's, yeah.
The interesting thing I thought was that Hamilton must be back in favour with the marshals, because there was an allegation that he was speeding through the yellow flags. And that's normally a kind of bang for rights, isn't it? You can prove if they are speeding. If you allege that, then you would have thought they would have the evidence before they actually alleged it. Mm. But they for some reason didn't do him on that one, which was good. Made the race good until he went pop mentally in an unstable way, started throwing his toys around.
That 25 grand steering wheel, you mean?
Yeah. Not happy, was he?
Now apparently the tops of those are made by McLaren, a different division of McLaren, and they all have to have them, and then they can build the rest of the wheel around them. But those wheels are like video games. They're unbelievable. They were, you know, the bit that Coulthard is always coming out with about, oh, you can get a guy come on the pit radio and all of a sudden you're like, oh, you know, I lost it and I hit the wall because the pit radio interfered with my concentration. Absolute rubbish. Absolute, utter and total balls. According to what I heard, the chatter on the radio into these guys' ears is near constant. They're never left alone. They've got signals in their ears which tell them when to change gear up and down. So there's a blip goes off in one ear and then a blip goes off in the other for changing gears backwards and forwards. And the steering wheels, they are constantly frigging with those things for best optimum setup, changing brake bias in and out of each of the corners. They mess with that steering wheel through every single corner of the track. There's no way on God's green earth that the pit radio stuff that we hear causes that kind of stuff. Not a chance. Mm. Absolute rubbish.
You didn't ask about the swearing, did you?
No, but there is a load.
Yeah, to stop the messages being broadcast.
Well, the one thing that was really interesting was talking to the IT guy there, and the head of IT showed us how they set up the pit wall stuff and all that kind of thing. Apparently, the frequency of an F1 engine just utterly screws up spinning media. They cannot use any kind of spinning media at all around it. DVDs or hard drives, they've all got to be SSDs, and a lot of the frequencies impede with the chemicals as well for inside the laptops that they buy. So they buy the laptops and they stick them in an oven and they effectively put them autoclave and heat them up cool down to 40 degrees, and if they survive that then they keep them, and if they don't they just send them back to the manufacturers.
Now, IT departments are pretty hard, you know, to get your nice laptop out of an IT department is pretty hard, but that's the worst excuse I've ever heard. I've got to have an SSD because it's rubbish with F1. I mean, you've seen an F1 car, I've got to have an SSD. Obviously works for them though. Good on them.
They said laptops, and they said, we haven't found anything else that works really, really well under the heat conditions. I said, have you tried a Mac? And they said, well, yeah, but the problem is it runs Macintosh, you see, doesn't it? We can't use Macintosh for the software we've got. I said, what's the fastest computer that runs Windows? And he said, I don't know. I said, a Mac.
Are they? Is this all on the computers in the garage and everything they make SSD?
Yeah, basically, you know the pit wall that goes across the front?
Yeah, yeah.
That's about five laptops, that's it. It's just five IBM ThinkPads.
I must admit, you know, they must have... I was thinking this during the first 30 races as I was tempted to drift off to sleep, in that the computer strategies that they're currently worrying all the way through in terms of when's the best time to pit and when's the best time to come in, and that computer program that they use to do that, do they all have different versions of that software doing those calculations, or do they develop their own? I'd be interested to know.
They're all on their own, from what I saw. Right, yeah. I mean, there was guys, they showed us the tables where they all sat in the main office, and there were six guys off to the left-hand side, and all they were doing was trawling through the data from the last race. And that was 4 days after 4 days after Monaco. They were just packing up for Canada. And it was, all they do is those guys just troll through the data that's taken off the cars. And then there's a dozen other guys who just do aerodynamics and that kind of stuff. And they were saying that the aerodynamics guys are all pilot flight, you know, aircraft engineers, not automotive engineers. Because the F1 car is closer to a fighter jet than it is to a car.
Do Marussia take readings from practice sessions and then feed them back into the CFD?
Whenever the car's out on the track, it's constantly gathering data, and they analyse all that data.
CFD.
We've seen the grids like McLaren have and like Red Bull have, which they put on the machines in practice sessions. Did Marussia have those as well?
I didn't see anything like that. No.
You know, they look almost like beer bottle crates or milk crates made out of metal. And they've got little pipes that sample the airflow.
They've got.
If you're a nerd and watch Free Practice 1 and 2, then you've probably seen them.
No. They say that the number of sensors, they've got like 180 sensors that go out on the car for practice sessions, but when they go for qualifying and race, there's only 40, 50.
Yeah.
They don't monitor anywhere near as much during race conditions. And also they were saying about the engine settings as well. If you turn both of the little dials on the steering wheel to one, that's maximum fuel mixture and maximum rev availability on the engine. And they said they'll probably never run that during the season for Charles Peak, and they'll only let Timo Glock have it probably for one lap of Hockenheim because it's his home track, if you like. It was dead interesting, really interesting. We'll have to get one of them on. I've talked to them about them coming on the show, and they're happy with that. So,
Cool.
Schumacher finished third.
He finished.
Schumacher finished.
Even he was surprised.
The headline was Schumacher finished. There was a great. Do you follow false F1 tweets?
No.
This guy tweets out stuff, and it's just complete and utter. It's F1 tweets. So I need to bleep that somewhere. But he tweeted out, interesting fact, Carter Kane has as many wins this season as Michael Schumacher. And which is a bit harsh. But Shuey has got nothing at all. No points. And then lo and behold, he pops a third. How about that? And he crossed the line apparently and said, where have I finished?
Yeah,
that was how bad it all was.
He was talking about it, and he said that he knew he was. He thought he was around sixth because he knew he was one place ahead of Webber because he'd seen Webber's pit board, and he was surprised because obviously he's completely unaware of what had been going on ahead of him in the last couple of laps.
He must also be deaf then. He must also be deaf and blind then, because going back to your further point of the team are always talking to him on the radio. He must have not been listening.
Well, I think it all happened very quickly at the end because there was suggestions over Kimi Raikkonen not getting second, wasn't there, because of a yellow overtake? But they've adjudged now that he'd already started the manoeuvre before he got to the yellow zone, so they've let him keep the second place grid penalty. The second grace finish. What happened? I didn't understand why Webber was at 19th on the grid.
Started. He had no. He lost his. Was it Kurs or DRS?
He was having brake and DRS issues, apparently. I didn't see most of the qualifying, but from reading reports afterwards, that's why I understand it was DRS and brake issues that he was having. So he was struggling to get a time.
Yeah, he was about a third of a second down.
He was well
every single 19. Lap. Broken DRS.
So he did. Was it permanent awesome open? To end up fourth.
Superb, yeah, absolutely. Anyone know what actually happened to Vettel's car? Why it stopped?
Alternator.
Same
as Grosjean. Two Renault engine.
It was an interesting result because of Vettel going out. And because obviously at that point in the race, Hamilton was going to come second, maybe third, and do his championship no harm at all because Alonso was going to win. And he just should have given up that place, really, and just kept as many points as he can, because at the end of the season, it will be really key that he'll be kicking himself that he's lost out on all those points against Vettel.
Well,
I know Alonso's up there as well, but...
There was an interview with Button during the week, and he was saying, you know, don't count me out of this year. I'm still not going to be world champion. I still could be world champion the way the season's unfolded. And he's got a point. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You know, it's so far up in the air that it is anybody's race still. 20 points is nothing.
Yeah,
I agree.
No. It's elite.
Be a most amazing comeback, though, wouldn't it?
The current standings, then, as they are, has got Alonso on 111 points. Next is Mark Webber on 91 points. So his fourth has done him a power of good. He's 20 points shy. Hamilton's then on 88 points. Vettel on 85. Rosberg on 75, which isn't bad. and Raikkonen 73. Grosjean at 53, so he's only 50 points back.
Yeah, and you think if he'd got a decent, if he'd actually finished, he probably would have ended up being second or possibly even winning. And, you know, he would have been right up in the mix there, wouldn't he?
Now, De Resta has been very consistent. He's been sort of 8, 9, 10 on the grid pretty much every race, hasn't he? But he's consistently also seemed to have failed to turn that into anything really meaningful.
Mm. His problem was he was disappointed by what happened on his last lap in Q3. He felt that he could have actually been much further up the grid, which would have made his race a little bit easier. Unfortunately, they decided to go for a one-stop start. A tyre strategy, and towards the end, it really, you know, he was getting passed in droves by loads of people, and that's what compromised his race.
I'm surprised they didn't change that actually when the safety car happened. He could have come in then and kind of gone for a quick third stint once the safety car got back going.
So he did a one-stop strategy the whole way around. Now they were talking on Sky, you know, could you go for a one-stop strategy? And I can't remember the chap that they spoke to. I think he was Red Bull, and he said, "Yes, it's possible, but he doesn't think." He said, "I don't think it's a smart play. I would say two or three today for sure." So, you know, there was a lot of the teams weren't, or he certainly wasn't looking at two or three. They were always looking at two to three.
Paul said afterwards he felt that it was about five or six laps too much for a one-stop strategy.
Mm.
So it probably wasn't too far off, and if they'd got their If he'd managed to pit under the during the safety car instead is his one stop, then probably would have worked out better for him.
Yeah, he's currently sitting 11th though, 27 points. So he's not horrific. Best finish 6th though, unfortunately.
Yeah,
can I just point something out on the circuit that I was surprised at was the number of boats that were on the harbour. Didn't seem like there were very many to me. It seemed like there were quite a few gaps.
Well, the harbour's not, it's an industrial port though, isn't it? There's not a lot of pleasure boat activity apart from that one little area.
This time next year, I'm going to get my dinghy, go down there. If they've got gaps.
Well, you might have a long wait because there's not going to be a race there next year.
Oh, bugger. Good job you told me that. I was about to get the dinghy out the loft.
No, they were saying in towards the end of the coverage on the red button that because of the Spanish financial situation, that I think Barcelona and Valencia are going to alternate the Spanish Grand Prix, and that they're not going to have the European Grand Prix in Spain next year.
Mm.
Where's it going to be?
I don't know.
Donington.
Oh, that's where it started Donington, out, wasn't it?
I remember Donington getting an F1 Grand Prix about 10, 12 years ago, more
1993,
maybe. 1993. And it was a good race.
It was.
It was a good race. I've raced around Donington as well, and it's got some lovely undulating straights and turns. And a hairpin, a Le Mans style hairpin at the top behind the grandstand. Loved it.
Start the campaign here.
Donington. I can't see it happening. It's in Nottingham.
We could always go with Alton Park instead.
Well, of course, the problem with Donington was there was all those issues, was it a couple of years ago, where they were apparently going to be running the British Grand Prix. And then, of course, the whole thing fell apart with the development of the circuit because they couldn't get all the money they needed. And that's why I ended up back at Silverstone again.
Now, can the European Grand Prix be in any European country?
Oh, it'll be in Abu Dhabi, won't it?
Yeah, because that's in Europe.
It'll be somewhere in the.
That's what we need. That's how to save the euro.
To be honest, the way to save
the euro is a Middle Eastern country in Europe.
It's not being Greece, is it?
I think they should scrap it. I think it's one of those that they should scrap because it is
Abu Dhabi.
No, the European Grand Prix, because it's non-country specific.
They should have Tunisia back, because Tunisia is one of the nicest circuits going.
I don't care, as long as they get the pool with the girls in.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Sorry.
Here's an interesting tweet.
Donington then, Steve.
I think Donington will match that somehow.
They'll be in wetsuits. Keep them warm.
Why don't we just have a fun F1 race and let's just do Brands Hatch short and then just have 25 second laps? You could have a 400 lap race. I don't know, you might be able to lure the NASCAR fans in. Interesting tweet just now from Inside Ferrari. Apparently in Monaco, Fernando said to the media, we could collect 50 points in the next three races. And he got 15 in Monaco, 10 in Canada, and 25 in Europe. He got 50 points.
Oh, that's interesting.
He's got some inside help, he has.
Yeah, but even he didn't expect to win this race.
Yeah, but Mandelard.
Not from a Lerige. Paul in the chat room is voting that Norwich holds the Grand Prix for Europe.
Oh dear.
Well, that make Jake very happy, because that's where he comes from.
I think there's a few who'd probably be suggesting Liverpool maybe, but the cars will be on bricks, won't they?
Should do Birmingham. Birmingham already has a grant from the Queen to close the roads for a street race.
We do, yes, but unfortunately they've stolen all the curbs now, haven't they, finally? All the ones up by the mosque have gone, so. Good hairpin, that was. Still that is.
Or we could do live coverage, Ewan.
We could.
Just point the boat come out the window.
No, actually, when they're the Formula 3000 there.
And yeah.
I live 7 miles out of the city, and you could still hear the cars when they were racing. It was phenomenally loud.
I don't think your street circuit would look quite as nice as the Valencia street circuit, though.
You'd be surprised, because don't forget they raced up and down the Queensway, which is, you know, a built-up street with... it didn't look that bad, actually. You should take that back, mate. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm not the greatest fan of Birmingham. It's grey and horrible, but it did look all right. It was okay. It wasn't.
No, love.
It was no Monaco, I'll grant you. All right, love. There was no port. There was canals, but there's
just
no
those streets
port.
Didn't look like they've ever had a car on them.
No, they didn't. That's true. They did look very, very
Birmingham's a little bit different.
More than. Yeah, okay, I'll grant. All right, I'll take it back. I'm talking rubbish. Magic moment, Steve.
Other than the views, my magic moment was the way that... Actually, it was when Vettel was walking back. He obviously had it and crashed or failed, but he was quite calm with it. And he had his helmet off. He was banging his, to the fans.
He was banging his gloves against the wall.
He was, but he calmed down very quickly. And compare that to the Hamilton, who is, I think he's a real red hot. He's a hot-headed racer. And just comparing the two states of mind of those two walking back, I think it shows a lot about Vettel's state of mind and where he's at the moment in terms of he's a lot more calm. You know, he's probably got a lot more... hope in him than Hamilton has. So yeah, it was interesting to see the contrast.
Okay, Sarah, yours.
I've got several to choose.
Oh,
from.
Here we go. You always had your best. Good.
Yeah, I know. I have to say, I think the probably the best one, and they did focus on it a bit towards the end, was Alonso nabbing Grosjean after the restart. That's probably the best one, I think, out of all of them. Because he just caught him completely unaware. And it was very clever. And I mean, that totally made his race.
There's something going on in the chat room about evolution and Norwich. But I really can't read out, I'm sure. But I'm just... not a thumb between them, says Pete. Maybe I've got that wrong. I've just jumped in halfway through. Chris, magic moment?
Magic moment for me was probably seeing Nico Hülkenberg finish ahead of Paul de Resta, because it means that the man's still got a bit of fight in him, because Paul's been doing pretty well this season.
Yeah, he's put him in the shadow a lot, hasn't he?
And yeah. I think Nico was also struggling with no curves for most of the race, so to get the result he did was pretty good.
Yeah, he finished fifth, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, they did an interview with Hülkenberg before they started. Brundle had caught hold of him, and he was very good. He was very good with the camera. You know, he clearly was doing something important, but he broke off to go and speak to Brundle, and deserves it. Nice guy. I agree. That's very good. My magic moment was Shuey, definitely. Just not knowing whether he got third, getting on the podium, the sentimental part of me. My heart is saying, oh, isn't that sweet that Shuey got hold of a bottle of champagne finally. But the real reason that his third is my magic moment is the fact that the headline on the Sky website is Shuey silences critics. And I'm just sitting thinking, you've had a third, which is kind of accidental, thanks to Maldonado ramming Hamilton off. You've crossed the line not even knowing where you are, and that's only thanks to the fact that what's his face has not had a penalty for his yellow overtake. You know, that's not really silencing your critics, is it? It's kind of picking a lottery ticket and getting three numbers and getting a tenner out of it. So that's my favourite bit, is the headline. Shuey silences his critics. Not. Right, quick look ahead. British Grand Prix next. The Bash, of course. Let's not forget that the Bash is in 10 days' time. Yes. 6th of July, Friday, here. Andy and Atko's coming over. I've got to go and pick him up from the airport and take him to his hotel next Sunday. And we're going to have loads and loads of fun. We've got a ton of beer. Tech Smith are the people that have sponsored it. They're the great people that make Camtasia 2 and Snag It 2. They're launching a new product at the moment, and they'll be bringing something with them associated with that. And it would be in your best interests to be at the Bash.
Ooh.
Enough said. Betsy Webber sorted it all out, and they've paid for all the food and all the beer for the Bash, so thank you to them. And those of you that have bought tickets, I did tell you you're going to get all your money back for the tickets before Mr. Anatko confirmed that he was going to be here. And everybody to a person who has previously bought a ticket has said that they don't mind donating the money for that ticket towards paying for Andy's airfare to come over. So thank you very much. That saved me £600. So I'm always grateful for that kind of stuff.
Good on them.
They are superb. Thank you. Wonderful listeners that we have. So come along Friday the 6th of July. It'll be a fantastic evening and day. It starts at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's going to go through till midnight. And we're going to have tons and tons of fun up here in Birmingham. And on the Saturday, I've hired a studio in Tamworth. We're all going to troll up there. It's £100, but we're going to split it between however many there are. It's not £100 each or anything like that. And Alex is going to bring up a static lighting setup, and I'm going to put a flashlight setup up. And we'll be there to help you. But we can model for each other and that kind of thing, and get used to the idea of using a big studio. And this thing's huge. It's got a 60-foot white infinity curve. It's enormous. You can put vans on it and things like that and shoot them. It's really, really good, and it's all fully equipped with lights and that kind of thing. So that'll be really good fun. That's on the Saturday. There we go. Come to the Bash. UK2 are the people that sponsor our podcast. They're fantastic and wonderful and dandy, and I'm normally off to the side here, which is why this isn't working. And I've just rolled over my toe with my bloody seat. Ow, that hurt.
Mute button.
Mummy. They support the network, not the Bagel Tech Network, the British Tech Network, but I can't find the correct logo. Please support them. Go to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, and put in all the details for going to UK2. Bottom left-hand corner, there's a logo. Click on that, and it'll take you through. If you want to buy stuff, there's loads of offer codes. British Tech is the start of it, and then you just put in VPS, VPN, DNS, domains, all that kind of stuff, and you get the reductions on your cart. Do put in the code and hit return before you put your payment details in. That way you can enter multiple codes and your basket will slowly decrease before you then put your payment details in and pay for the lot. But you effectively could end up with a zero balance in your basket. The deals are that good. 20% off domains, free months on VPN and that kind of stuff. No DNS management charge. Check them out. They're worth it, and they really look after us. We've had a really, really bumper month. 92,000 downloads of last week's Mac show. We've taken the mickey out of their bandwidth. Thank you very much, UK2. We really appreciate it. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Neighbour?
On Twitter, at CloughendHQ, and also at the London Mac User Group, and we meet on the second Monday of each month. And also at the Bash, I'll be there.
Yes.
Look forward to it, very much so.
You've sent the mead up, thanks to you.
Oh, yeah, have you got the mead?
We've got the mead. It's going to be good.
Is it to hand?
It's still in the container. I haven't taken it out. I haven't opened it yet. It's in the plastic.
You haven't drunk it then?
No, I haven't touched it. You will be here for that. And also, the London Mac User Group, we were there last week for the WWDC keynote. That had 46,000 downloads, mate. Your little video of your backside, thanks to Chris.
For some reason. And we're also going out for a beer on Tuesday night in London this week, aren't we?
We are. We're going to go out.
Tuesday the 26th.
Yes, we went out last week. Things got rather busy on the day that we said we were going to have a beer, but they won't be busy this week, and we're definitely going to go out, and we're definitely going to have a beer on Tuesday. So we'll tweet out which pub we're going to start at. But at the moment, it's looking like Covent Garden.
Yeah, about 6:30, something like that.
Half six, 7 o'clock. Sarah, where can we get you, Mrs.? apart from in the pub on Tuesday.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to be there as well this Tuesday, hopefully. You can get hold of me on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK and on various other shows on the network.
Excellent. And Christopher W., where are you, sir?
I'm at Christopher W., and you can find me lurking on Facebook in the meantime.
Facebook? Do people still go there?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a MySpace as well. I'm on that.
Really? Yeah.
Bebo, Friendster.
You and all the other porn stars.
I'm bringing it back, man. Bringing it back.
Have you got a
2K12?
Have you got a Pinterest page?
I do have a Pinterest page where I pin all the things. I pin all the things.
Are you getting married, or have you got a girlfriend, or it's all wedding stuff, is it?
This is true. When I signed up, they sent me free estrogen tablets. I don't know why.
You see. That's the thing.
Yeah. I just pin all the things. That's what you do, right? You pin all the things. Yeah, I thought it was just wrist exercise.
No, that's a different thing entirely that we won't talk about.
The rest.
Pin.
Oh. I'm completely estrogen tablets.
I do have an interest in estrogen. Pins. Look, I'm collecting.
Estrogen?
Yeah.
Pins. Collecting pins. Yes. Look. Pins.
Ouch.
That's dangerous. How dare you do that on the show? So there you go. It's Christopher W. Pin Swallower.
That's right, yeah.
I'm Ewan Rankin. You can find me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or you can follow the network at British Tech Network as well. Or you can go to the website at BritishTechNetwork.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with the F1 show for the British Grand Prix. If the hangovers have cleared, they may not have. Failing that, we'll see you. Thanks.